everyone. Hope you guys have all been well. You guys, I feel so on top of this recording stuff. I hope that you're all very happy. I know I am. I don't know, when I sit down, I feel like I'm talking to my best friend. So it's been really fun to get back into this and really just be focused on recording. And I'm having so much fun with it. So I hope you guys are enjoying all the episodes coming out. It's been almost 3 years since I started this podcast, and I honestly just cannot believe that. When I started, if you've been listening or gone back and listened to the older episodes, I had a co-host, my best friend growing up, Hannah. If you're listening, love you. But yeah, I had a co-host when I first started, and we would get on here and both share a case, and then, you know, she just had a lot of things going on in her life and, you know, ultimately decided that she wasn't going to be able to record weekly and pass the torch on to me to take on solo. So that's where I've been for like the last 2 years. And I love recording and talking by myself. I think it, you know, really works out, but I do miss having people on here. So we're going to have some guest episodes this year, and I'm very excited about that. And maybe Hannah will join us for one soon. I don't know, we'll see, but it's been cool to see the growth in not only the podcast, but my confidence level, I guess, when it comes to speaking publicly. I went back and listened to some of the first couple episodes, and I definitely have grown so much in the podcasting role. And I told Gabby a couple years ago that I just would have never believed that I would have my own podcast one day, and that I would, you know, have an audience and supporters and all of those things that I do have now. So it's just been really cool to dive into my craft, I guess. So thank you guys for listening. Happy almost 3 years of the Suspect podcast, and many more to come. We're grinding out those episodes this year. We're trying to get these stories shared and, you know, see what we can do to better our communities and our cities, the states, everywhere. You know, what laws can we implement? What bills can we pass? What stories can we share that change perspectives and outlooks on things that are going on in our world today? I think those questions are so important, and that's part of the reason that I started this podcast. So I love you guys. Thanks so much for listening. With that being said, 3 years of Suspect is coming up, but also, as you guys know, my birthday is coming up. I will be turning 27 on February 7th, and I just feel like I've grown so tremendously as a person, especially, I would say, probably the last 5 years, but more so the last two for sure. And I've learned so much about, like, self and the world and just how things work and ideologies, perspectives that people have, and how they go hand in hand, you know. So when I was taking notes for the podcast today, I wrote down just a couple things that I feel like were crucial and things that I've learned, you know, by this point in my life. And I don't know, I feel like these are things that I wish when I was 15 that I had, you know, somebody sit down and tell me to actually take into consideration before moving into my adult life. And I definitely had great advice from my peers. I'm not saying I didn't, but I feel like these were crucial things that maybe should have been said to me growing up, and they were not. So just a couple of things that I'm going to read off to you guys and discuss a little. So the first thing I wrote down is lead with love always. And that's something that's actually my slogan for the year, is lead with love for 2024. But that's something that I've been trying to do more so the last year or so. And all my interactions and my behavior and my conversations and everything that I do, I just want to lead with love. I want everyone to know, you know, I love you. I love you through this. I love you through this conversation, through this interaction, through this phase of your life, whatever. So that's something that I definitely feel is so important. Next one would be to know the people around you. And I feel like this is really important, because a lot of times as individuals, we're very trusting, and that can put us in a lot of bad situations. I mean, we've seen it and heard it on this podcast, you know, people that have been hurt or murdered by people that they really trusted and people that they thought they knew. So I would just advise to really know the people around you and also limit your circle around you. I think that when you give people, everyone, access to you so easily, that causes a lot of heartache, not only heartache, but a lot of problems that you just don't need and problems that can be avoided. So know the people around you. Sit at the table with people doing better than you. This is hard for some people because I think there's a jealousy aspect in us as individuals. We want so badly to be happy for someone that's doing better than us, but we still envy them. You know, we still envy them, and sometimes that can be intimidating. And that jealousy can turn into almost anger or animosity towards a person. And I just really encourage you not to think like that. Sit at the table with the people that are doing better than you, because they probably have advice or words for you that others around you don't have. And I feel like we need to learn to be inspired by the people doing better than us and not so much intimidated. Yeah. Oh, that's so funny. I wrote these down a couple days ago. My next one literally says, learn to be inspired, not intimidated. So I guess this is like more than just like sitting at the table with people that are doing better than you, but by everything. Like, don't be intimidated by things, be inspired by things, let things encourage you to be creative and open up your mind maybe to a different perspective. Be authentically you, whatever that looks like. I love that one so much. I love that I wrote that down. This is something that I struggled with for a long time, because I think that especially with social media being so fucking prevalent nowadays, that we get into this mindset of like wanting to be accepted by the world and the people around us. Maybe as women, we tend to want to be accepted by men that we're attracted to. Stop that. Just stop all of that. Be authentically you at all times, regardless of who you are around, because the people that accept the authentic version of you are really the people that are meant to be in your life forever. You know, your soulmates, whether those are friends, relationships, your family members, whatever that does look like. But that's something I've learned a lot within the last couple of years, is to be authentically myself. And I'm so happy that I can do that, and the people in my life continue to love me and support me. And yeah, I'm a weirdo, but it's okay. They love me for it anyway. Okay, the next one, bizarre is okay. In fact, I love it. This is another one that goes to back, I guess, to just authentically being yourself. So I'm a weirdo. Like I said, I have a bit of a personality on me. I'm funny. I make jokes I probably shouldn't make at times that they shouldn't be made at. I love to make people laugh. I'm always like dancing, being silly, stuff like that. And I don't know, I guess I could come off as like bizarre to somebody in the public eye if I'm being goofy, like with one of my girlfriends or even one of my guy friends. But I don't know, I love it. I love when people are bizarre. Be bizarre, be weird, be strange, be that person that says the things that nobody is expecting. I love it. Know that there is always growth on the other side of pain. Yeah, this is a tough one, right? Because when we're going through that pain, or when we're going through that situation, we can't see on the other side of that, right? Because we're feeling those emotions that are very heightened in the middle of that situation, whatever that may be. So we don't think about, hey, I'm going to grow in this way, and this might alter me as a person, but I am going to grow, and I'm going to be more aware, or I'm going to be more guarded towards certain people so I'm not being hurt. Whatever it is, you know, but I just want to encourage you guys all to understand that there is growth on the other side of pain every single time, whether it's a breakup, a loss in the family, you lost your job, whatever happened, there is going to be growth. You're going to learn how to navigate your relationships better. You're going to learn to find a job that's not a toxic work environment for you and pays you and treats you the way you should be treated as an employee. Whatever. Just know there's always growth coming. And it's hard in that moment to know it, but accept it. Go through your emotions. They are valid, but growth is coming. Oh my God, I sound like a therapist right now. Don't you guys think? This next one I love so much. And this is such a hard one to grasp, especially for us ladies. But ladies, listen to me. Listen to me. Not everything is supposed to be, and that is okay. It's okay. I promise. That's something so hard for us to grasp. I feel like especially with our romantic relationships and connections, because we want everything to work out, especially for ladies. You know, if we're really like romantically pursuing somebody and wanting to be in a relationship with that person, we probably really like them already. You know, we're not just going to date somebody we don't like. So I think that we get into our heads a little bit. And once we've decided that we want to date somebody, we've decided that that's going to happen. And when it doesn't happen, we're broken. And then we go back to being insecure and wondering what went wrong. What did I do? Nothing. Sometimes things just don't work out, guys. And that's completely fine. You are allowed to accept that situation for what it is, what you learned from it. It doesn't make that person a bad person. It doesn't make the situation or the connection a bad connection. It just wasn't meant to be, and that's fine. We just need to accept that and move on. And once I started to learn how to do that, every person that I met that, you know, I was devastated, like, damn, it didn't fucking work out. Like, damn, what did I fucking do wrong? Once I stopped doing that and I just accepted the situation as, hey, you know, like, it really sucks that that did not work out with that person, but this person really, like, treated me with respect and communicated with me really well, and I had never had that before. So moving into your next, you know, romantic connection, that's something that you know that you want as a person and in a relationship. So stuff like that, I don't know, I just feel like I've learned so much, and I'm thankful for the things that didn't work out, and I guess that's just part of maturing and being maybe in your late 20s, but I'm thankful for the things that did not work out in my life, because my life would be so much different if everything that I wanted to work out did. I probably would not be in Colorado right now. I don't know. It would be so vastly different. So be thankful for the things that did not work out. Better is coming. Oh, this next one might make some of you mad, but listen to me. Your real friends hold you accountable. Your friends that go along with everything that you do, even though they know you are dead wrong, those are not your friends. Those are not your fucking friends. Those are the people that will turn their back on you in a heartbeat. Oh yeah, they were cool with you committing whatever crime. As soon as the police come knocking on their door, guess who's telling? Yeah, your friend. Exactly. So your real friends, I seriously, it took me forever again to realize in life, but your real friends hold you accountable. Like, guys, if I text my friends right now on some sideways ass shit, you best believe they 100% are correcting me and probably calling my dad. Like, I'm dead ass serious about that too. They're absolutely calling my father and sending me a paragraph cussing me the fuck out about why whatever the fuck I just did was not okay. Those are the friends that you need. The friends that are going to put you in your place, they're going to hold you accountable, and they're not going to agree with everything that you do. They want what's best for you. They want your life to be the best version it can be, and they're going to correct you every time that they see you're doing something that's not leading to that. Amen? Amen. All right, the next one. My girlfriends show me what real love looks like. Ugh. And I wish I could express how much I mean this in my heart, because again, as women, I feel like we grew up watching Disney movies and reality shows and all these things where the universe is quite literally telling us that we have no worth if we don't have a romantic partner. And that's just the farthest thing from the truth, and that we'll never know what real love looks like unless we're swept off of our feet by Prince Charming. Just not true. My girlfriends show me what real love looks like every single day, and the way they speak to me and the way they act around me and the acts of service that they provide me, everything. You fucking name it. Like, I really had this realization a couple months ago where I was like, I honestly just really think I'm in love with my girlfriends. Like, they make me so happy. They bring out the best parts of me. I feel so warm and giggly around them all the time. And what man am I feeling like that around 24/7? Not fucking one, I'll tell you that. So really just take pride and stride in the fact that your girlfriends are the ones that are going to show you what real love looks like every single fucking time. Okay, this next one also very important. Your mistakes do not define you. And this is something, like, especially when you have toxic people in your life, like, they love to bring up things that you did or things that you said years ago. My ex did this to me all the fucking time, you guys. He would bring up things that I did or maybe messages that he saw on my phone and try to use it to attack me, like, years later in an argument. And it was just like, I would literally say, okay, that was years ago. Like, you could use that against me now. I really don't give a fuck. And that's how you should feel about everything that you've done and said. Like, your mistakes do not define who you are as a person. Something you did even a month ago, year ago, 5 years ago does not define who you are as an individual now. And tell that person to go fuck themselves. That's how I feel. So I think we all are evolving and growing as people on the daily because we're all interacting and in these situations, again, on a daily that are altering us as people. So I just hate when people try to use your mistakes against you. Now, if it's a character flaw at that point, I can't help you there. But if it's a mistake, like something you said or something you did one fucking time and somebody is continuously using that against you to attack your character, fuck that person. But again, if it is a character flaw, please work on that. Go to therapy. Thank you. Okay, the last one that I wrote on here, also very important and something that I've learned, something that my grandma told me growing up, always as a little girl, and I will never forget this. You don't get to decide how you make somebody feel. Wow, mic drop, right? Because we should be, with our actions, trying to make people feel the best way that we can, right? But we're human, whatever, things happen, things are said. You don't get to decide how the things you do and the things you said make somebody feel. You don't get to tell somebody they're not allowed to be sad about that. You don't get to tell somebody they're not allowed to be mad about that. You don't get to do that. And that was something that I had to fucking learn, especially, like I said, my grandma told me that my whole life growing up, but I feel like I've really learned that perspective within the last like 2 or 3 years. Just with like friendships and like, you know, different connections that I've had since moving to Denver. But yeah, that's a really crucial one. So those are the things I just wanted to share with you guys. Some, you know, little tidbits I've learned by 27. And I think they're all super important and definitely things I wish somebody would have told me at like 12 or 13. Okay, my friends, today we have a Reddit episode. So this one's a little different. You guys know I usually try to keep the Reddit threads pretty lighthearted, but this is a pretty interesting one. This one is, what crime do you really want to see solved and justice served in? And I was reading through the comments and I was just like, damn, there are some good ones on here that I would not have even thought of, you know, if somebody asked me that at like a dinner table. So we're going to read through these and talk about them a bit. Okay, the first one is from a deleted username. It says, the disappearance of Timothy Pitson in Illinois, 2011. His father dropped him off at school. His mother picked him up shortly after. She took him on a road trip to his favorite places. She called family and let them know that they were safe. The mother was found dead by suicide in a hotel room a couple of days later, but the child was nowhere to be found. She left a note saying Timothy was safe and would never be found. Oh my gosh, I've never heard of this. The first comment says, that has to be the creepiest thing I've ever read. Like, where would he be? What do you mean, safe? Ooh. Somebody said, safe with me vibes. Seems like she wanted to make his last few days good because she knew he was going to die. I really think she killed and buried or threw him off somewhere. Oh my gosh, that is so creepy. That is so scary. Dare Delvis 421. Adam Walsh was a boy abducted from a Sears in Florida in 1981. They later found his decapitated head, but never his body. The police had a suspect, but botched the investigation. No one was ever charged. R.I.P. little guy. I remember this, actually, in Florida. Bad Cat No-No said, his dad is a great advocate for solving crimes. He hosted America's Most Wanted for many years. At least John Walsh turned his anger and grief into something super positive. Oh, wow. I did not know that. Agraham 1121. I never knew about Adam Walsh until I worked at Walmart and had to learn what code Adam is. I'm decently sure it's universal in all department stores in the U.S. But if you're shopping and you hear them call code Adam over the speakers, stop what you're doing and start looking for a kid matching the description. Fond Blonde said, KK's Corner triple homicide. Three victims shot execution style in the convenience store cooler and made to believe it was a robbery gone wrong. One man in prison. The sheriff at the time was corrupt along with many high-ranking officials. The sheriff's son was a well-known drug dealer and bragged about the crime. One of the victims was speaking out about a murder made to look like a suicide, and she was shot to shut her up. Oh, wow. Corrupt town. Somebody commented on that and said, and if I remember correctly, the one guy in prison has been there for years and won't roll on the others. Makes you wonder what he knows. 20 plus years and won't speak because of death threats towards his children and other family. Yikes. Ooh. Sounds like it runs deep in that county. Yikes, 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 yikes. Corrupt, corrupt, corrupt. C-Team 19. Might be cheating, but all three have to be rolled into one. John David Gosh, 12, gone missing delivering the paper in Des Moines, Iowa on September 5th, 1982. Eugene Martin, 13, gone missing delivering the paper in Des Moines, Iowa on August 12th, 1984. Mark Allen, 13, gone missing, heading to a friend's house in Des Moines, Iowa on March 29, 1986. Just Vega comments on that. The ages of the boys and the timing seem too similar. I used to think being found dead was rough. The idea that you'll never know is especially harder on their families. There are cases where people remain optimistic but seem relented to the idea that their loved ones aren't ever coming back. People are so fucked up to one another. DCAT comments on that. As a parent, it is horrifying to think I'd never know for certain. Every crowd would be overwhelming, unable to stop scanning the faces for some hope that one of them could be my aged son or daughter. And the fear the child must fear as its innocent life is replaced by some horrible fate. The pain is unfathomable. Yeah, I cannot imagine being a parent and like anything happening to my child, but just imagine never knowing. Your kid just goes missing one day and they're never found. So you don't know if they died. You don't know if they're like being held in a basement. Like, oh God, so scary. Cares Child, whoever did the Tylenol murders. For those who don't know, in 1982, there was a series of mysterious deaths. It was later discovered that these deaths had been caused by the Tylenol, which had been swapped out for cyanide. This was one of the main reasons bottles nowadays have the seals that say, do not buy if broken. Edit, the Tylenol murders are the reason bottles nowadays have seals to prevent tampering. Throw away LLM help. 18 U.S.C. 1365 was enacted in 1983 as a result of the Tylenol murders, and if found guilty, you could face 5 to 20 years if someone got hurt and life if someone died. They've got a whole wave of protections for consumers because of this, and it's definitely one I'd like to find out who did. What was the reason? Yeah, that's crazy. I would really like to know who did that. Slowly Kitty 02. On May 18th, 2021, my mom called me screaming. I was on my way to a doctor's appointment, so I was already in the car. I couldn't understand her, but my first thought was that she had an intruder in her home and he was killing her. Then I finally understood her say, guys, I'm not even going to try to say that because I'm going to mispronounce it, meaning they've killed my brother. I thought surely there's been a mistake. But her voice said it all. It was true. I go to her house and see she's losing it. Over time, we find out that he had been stabbed over 37 times. Wow. He'd been in his PJs and had tried to hide in the restroom by the signs of the struggle and blood-stained doors. Police, unfortunately, have done nothing. His phone was nowhere to be found. My mom is a mess. Her best friend's life was taken from him. I wish he was here. The only thing we can do is find justice for him. I just wish we knew who was behind it. Aw, I'm so sorry that happened to your family. That's awful. Fun Experience 6096. Jason Landry, a Texas State student who disappeared. His car was found crashed and abandoned in Luling, Texas. His clothes were found in the road. His wallet and phone were left in the vehicle, but no sign of Jason. Majestic AD4074 comments on that. I always thought that that was a case of a man crashed his car, got delirious from brain trauma, and died from his wounds. But the more I find out about the case, the less and less I believe in a straightforward answer. Suvin Pond, the disappearance of the Springfield 3. In the early morning hours of June 7th, 1992, these three women, Cheryl Levitt, 47, her daughter Suzanne Streeter, 19, and Susie's friend Stacy McCall, 18, all vanished from Cheryl and Susie's home following a night of fun and partying. All their personal belongings, their cars, purses, and the little dog was left behind. The front porch light's glass globe was broken, and there was a weird message of the answering machine that accidentally got deleted.
That's scary as fuck. That's literally terrifying.
AFDC92, Asha Degree. I grew up not far from her and vividly remember when it happened. It was all over the news. Such an odd case. She was apparently very shy and timid, plus her parents were very protective, so not likely to have befriended a stranger to run away with. And she was afraid of storms and the dark, so the fact that she packed a bag and walked out in the middle of the night during a heavy rainstorm just doesn't make much sense either. Parents and brother have been investigated and cleared by the police, plus multiple people saw her on the road, so she wasn't killed in the home, and they made up a story about her running off. My theory is that she was groomed by someone the family knew and trusted, like a neighbor or a church member, and that they somehow convinced her to leave her house to meet them for whatever reason. I also think it is very likely that people in the community know who it is, but because of prominence in the community and probably a lack of evidence tying them to anything, they aren't spilling.
Yeah, that's crazy. I do remember the Asha story.
Even more odd is the photo of an unidentified girl that was found with some of Asha's possessions during the initial search. Then when they found her backpack years later, it was wrapped in plastic and had another girl's clothes in it. Yeah, the photo of the other little girl is puzzling, and I think there was also a book that was from her elementary school that she hadn't checked out among the other items, too.
Wow, guys, these comments are good. Someone said, I also agree that she got groomed. Like, she had a good home life and social life, so that's one thing.
Another thing is that her parents wouldn't let her use the internet, specifically because they didn't want her interacting with online predators. Then the fact that she was scared of storms and barely packed anything in her bag is the cherry on top. It's such an odd case, but I feel like one piece of information might finally solve it. A lot of people mistakenly say she couldn't have been groomed because she didn't use the internet, forgetting that grooming commonly occurs in real life. It could have been a teacher, family friend, counselor, etc.
Yeah, that's wild.
A deleted username. This may not be a famous case, but in my country, there was this 16-year-old girl who was found in a vacant lot. She was raped and stabbed to death. Her face was skinned, and an autopsy also revealed that her tongue, trachea, esophagus, parts of her neck, and her right ear were missing. There was alleged suspects, but it was never known who really did it to her. This happened in 2019.
Oh my gosh, somebody said, what the fuck, that's horrible, where did this happen? I think this was the murder and rape that happened in Cebu, Philippines. Oh gosh, that's awful. Why?
A deleted username. The disappearance of William Tyrell, the little boy in the Spider-Man suit, was outside playing with his sister while visiting their foster grandma's place and then just gone. It's a very complicated case due to William's status as a foster child and many of the details about that being hidden for a couple years. It also meant that William basically had no advocates for that time as well. Not to mention the police really fucked up in places too. They dismissed any involvement from the foster parents pretty much immediately and instead focused on potential child predators. It was poorly handled and destroyed reputations. One of the lead detectives destroyed his own reputation as well because he went too far. In the past couple years now, a lot more criticism has been put on the foster parents. I wrote up a post about the investigation and previous theories before the police changed directions and started looking at the foster parents again. The current theory is that William fell and the foster family covered it up. Honestly, makes a lot of sense considering some of the details. Oh, God, that's awful. That poor baby. You, Marzipan 2880. In 1998, I was 8. A girl of the same age went missing from the local playground / park. I was a kid, but it was crazy to me because even though I didn't know her personally, she lived 2 blocks away. And the scary thing was my dad, older cousin, younger brother, and I were at the park. We left and walked to the corner store. When we arrived, the girl and her siblings and friends were leaving to go to the park. She disappeared that day. If I remember correctly, kidnapping was suspected and a white car was involved. My brother later became classmates with her younger sister. She wasn't okay. It was as if everyone knew who this family was and looked at them a certain way. I'm guilty of it too. I was curious and sad. I've always wondered what happened to her and look up her story and family every couple of years. Oh, that's awful. Yeah, it hits different when it's like a kid and you're, I mean, it's awful in general, obviously, but like when you're a kid and it's like a kid in your community. Oh, so sad. Everything Latte. Jennifer Keese. She went missing in Florida. Then authorities found her car had been abandoned and moved. They have a photo of the suspect moving her car, but his face is obscured by a fence. She's never been seen again. Brian Schaefer, the guy who walked into a bar in Ohio and was never seen leaving and was never heard from again. What did Scott Peterson do to Lacey Peterson? Ooh, those are good ones. Tainted Bloody said, back at the beginning of 2009, a 17-year-old girl didn't come back to her house after going out with her ex-boyfriend just to chat. Until this day, there's no cause of death because there's no body, and there's been 7 different versions given by one considered guilty. The other people arrested involved minors and close friends of hers. Thanks to one of the reporters involved since the beginning of the case and who still pursues the truth, along with a documentary published on Netflix, the case has been reopened. I really hope you are finally found and have justice served, Marta. Deleted username said, would be nice to get Epstein's list and put all those assholes in jail. JMT2589, the murders of Barry and Honey Sherman. Pharmaceutical billionaires who were found dead in a suspicious way in their mansion. The Toronto police bungled the case, and it seems like it might never be solved. It intrigues me because who did it? A lot of talk about it being a hit from a rival drug company, even their own son. Somebody commented on that and said, my dad works in Toronto. He's convinced it's because they were involved in organized crime. I mean, they were billionaires, so that's not too far-fetched, I feel like. ACNH1222, a girl from my hometown who graduated high school with me, was groomed by police officers through her teen years. Almost 3 years ago, she was found dead in her apartment, pregnant with what she said was the cop's baby, although he denied it. He was the last person to see her in her apartment. But her death, investigated by the very police force that groomed her, was ruled as suicide. I don't believe that for a second. I think she was either murdered or it was a coerced suicide. I think everyone has wanted answers from the beginning, but as more and more from the investigation has come out, there have just been more and more questions to need answers for. Oh, yeah, that is a bad one. It definitely sounds like she was probably murdered and the police covered that up. Okay, Rat Zinc said, Joseph Augustus Zarelli was formerly known as the boy in the box since February of 1957. He was found in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, USA, stuffed in a cardboard bassinet box. I followed his case for almost 2 decades now, and I hope that whomever beat him so badly and murdered that precious boy is still alive so they can be brought to justice. I realize due to the amount of years that have passed since his murder that this may not be possible unless the perpetrator was young, but I still have hope. I know there are many unsolved murders out there, but this is the one that haunts me. Ooh. Somebody commented on that and said, this is such a heartbreaking case. That little boy was malnourished, killed, and then thrown out like a piece of trash. I'm so glad that he has his name back. I watched the press conference, and while it seems like the police have his name, they're still trying to figure out the details of his life. They confirmed that both biological parents are deceased and that his siblings on both his mother and father's side are still living. The both sides' comments make me think that he was an illegitimate child. There was also speculation that he may have had a mental or physical disability, and that all of those reasons make me wonder if he'd been hidden away and either neighbors or others in the community didn't know he existed or were told he'd been sent away to an institution, which was the normal for disabled kids back in the 50s, or had been given to the church for an adoption or something like that. The police have said that they have an idea who killed him but don't want to speak on it too much yet, and also have not named the parents in order to protect the privacy of the living siblings, who at least on one side apparently didn't even know he existed. The father's likely identity has been found by web sleuths, though, and seems like he was married after Joseph's death, and it's not looking like his wife was the boy's mother. That's a crazy one. That's deep. Yeah, I forgot they just put an identity to that boy. I remember that story. That's insane. All right, guys, and that is the end of the Reddit thread. I'll link this in the episode notes as well, so you can kind of read through these comments if you like. It's very interesting to see others' perspectives on these cases. So I hope you guys enjoyed those. If you have any cold cases that you would like to see solved and justice served in, please send those over on Instagram at Suspect Podcast. And if you haven't left a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify Podcasts, please take 2 seconds to do that so we can have a bigger audience here, guys. We can bring more friends into the family. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode, and in